So this is from the Dhammapada, this is verse 1. Mind precedes all phenomena. Mind is their leader and their maker. If one speaks or acts with a corrupt mind, suffering follows from that, as a wheel follows the ox's hoof. So the question is, what does it mean that mind precedes all things, all phenomena? What is a corrupt mind, and why does it give rise to suffering?
So in simple terms, mind precedes all things simply means that pretty much anything that you can experience, perceive, know, remember, plan, anything that can manifest in any shape or form, in any sense, imaginary, doesn't matter how, requires the mind. Requires the mind to be there, requires you to be conscious. So, in that sense, you can't even fathom, you can't even imagine things on their own, standing in the world on their own without you being aware of them. Because like even that imagination is something that your mind precedes and enables it to do. So in that sense, mind comes first. Not like mind can stand on its own. You know, like in order to be conscious, there needs to be something to be conscious of. But consciousness on its own cannot stand. Mind on its own cannot stand. Mind, mano, needs its objects, needs its counterparts that define it. But those counterparts would not exist without that mind. So that's what it means, mind comes first. Corrupt mind is the mind affected with greed, desire, sensuality, ill will, indolence. Mind that doesn't have perspective. Mind that entertains ownership of things. Mind that assumes contradictions, such as things existing outside of it. To name one,
the idea that mind is the, well, this mind precedes all things, and some people think mind is eternal and stands independent of all things. So that's another corruption of mind.
Exactly. Yeah. Thinking that the mind can stand on its own, you know, like you hear the teachings like the pure mind. Even like pure consciousness that's independent of the aggregates and stuff, that's complete nonsense. That's a fantasy imagination that there and then is something you're conscious of and your mind precedes and you're aware of it. But see, you gave it the significance of it being more than it is. Oh, there is this great mind outside of things, or there is this great reality outside of this mind. Either way, you're overshooting the mark. You're not seeing the dependence between the mind and dhammas, mind and phenomena. They exist to the same extent. Inasmuch one defines the other one defines the former one. So it's like, it's the relationship that the Sariputta used in the suttas to describe Namarupa and Vijnana Namarupa, like two sticks supporting each other. None of them can remain standing without the other one. And neither of them stands more than the other one, so to speak. So yeah, those will all be the corruptions of the mind. But see, regardless of what corrupted, wrong views you might have, all of those views get their fuel from desire, from delight, from aversion, and from distraction and indolence. If you were to not give in to those basic contradictions of sensual desire, ill will, and distraction, delusion, the views would diminish. However wrong they were before, they would diminish the fuel, their intensity. In other words, you would be removing the dust from your eyes, kind of almost unknowingly, so to speak. If you are purifying your mind from greed, aversion, and delusion, you are removing, simply you're removing the fertile ground for the proliferation of the wrong views. So you might still have some wrong views left, but you would not have as many, and those that are left probably would not be as solidified and strong. as the ones that still have that vast amount of fuel of desire and sensuality and so on. So those are the corruptions of the mind. And so you could see then, with mind affected with desire, anything you perceive, smell, taste, touch, remember, imagine, anything, paired with a corrupt mind, standing there together with a corrupt mind, it's going to be distorted. It's not going to be understood. It's not going to be seen correctly. And that distortion is manifested through things like ownership, conceit, sensuality. So if you, a sense of self as well, yeah. So basically, if you have, like, if you say, oh, do I regard things as mine? Do I have desire towards sense objects? Is my sense of self, is my conceit still there? All of those are symptoms of that corruption still being there, fueled. Or fueled to some extent. Maybe not the same for all people, but if those things exist in your experience, they are the indicators that the corrupt mind is still there, and you haven't addressed it fully. Because you can't possibly have an uncorrupt mind and have a sense of self. Uncorrupt mind and have a desire towards sense objects. Uncorrupt mind and have a conceit or ill will. Impossible. Inconceivable. So, and then why that results in suffering? Well, because presence of craving in your experience, in any shape or form, on any level, means presence of suffering to that extent. Not more, not less. Doesn't mean suffering will come later, even if it does. It means immediately, simply, the presence of a mind corrupted through craving. Thus, the presence of craving means presence of suffering, means presence of unease. So even if you say, oh, I don't suffer about anything currently, there is nothing bothering me, I'm quite happy. If you dig deep, even within that happy experience, there and then, while it's present, you would see that the overall framework of that experience is certain uneasiness, certain implication of the lack of control, anxiety, and so on. Now, obviously, when things are pleasant, you focus on what's in front of you, so you ignore that very framework. But if you are honest, you would see that it is very much still there. So even in your greatest moments of happiness, if your mind is not uncorrupted from those three corruptions, means fundamentally you are still very much within the domain of suffering. Because dukkha is measured by that. It's measured by the degree of uneasiness. So whether it's sometimes a subtle uneasiness or a coarse one or a full-blown anxiety, it's the same thread of the same dukkha, of the presence of the same craving, of the same corrupt mind. So it's not like, I am directly responsible for the presence of craving in my mind, so I will choose not to crave, and that's how mind will stop to crave. It's not that easy. It's more like things that I do on this indirect level, sight, sound, smell, taste, touches, ideas I repeatedly engage with desire, with delight, with ill will, with aversion, that keeps my mind corrupted. Corrupted mind is affected with craving. Presence of that craving in that corrupted mind is why I feel suffering over here. So you could say you are the victim of craving, for which you are indirectly, basically, inadvertently almost responsible. You're fueling it unknowingly. So there you go. Mind precedes all things, comes first, i.e., if you are paired with an uncorrupt mind, everything will be uncorrupted. If you are paired with a corrupted mind, everything will be distorted and corrupted. Mind is corrupted through greed, aversion, delusion, and such mind causes suffering, because that's what that's where the craving exists in such a mind. That's where the craving can only exist. Craving can only exist in a corrupted mind. So presence of craving means presence of suffering.